We'll call the meeting to order and Brenda, call the official roll, please.
Ewing.
Here.
Greenfield.
Here.
Grunewald. Gary Hegg.
Here.
Carpin.
Here.
Morris.
Here.
Stoltz.
Here.
And Blumhart.
Here. I would like to welcome everyone participating in today's telephone conference call meeting or listening online. This meeting is streaming live on SD.net, a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. For the benefit of our online listeners, I request that all participants please identify themselves when speaking during the meeting. Participants should all also remember to unmute their microphones only when speaking. The meeting is also being recorded and the audio will be made available online following the meeting. To find the audio recording online, do a web search for South Dakota Boards and Commissions portal, follow the link, and select the name of the board. One thing I was going to bring up before we start is Brenda did send me an email and Mr. Morris looked at it and said that we don't actually have to do a roll call vote on everything. We can do a voice vote, even doing it by telephone meeting. So what I think I'm going to do is with the basic, like the approval of minutes and adjournment, I think I'll just call for a voice vote. And unless somebody votes nay, then we'll do an actual roll call vote. Other than that, we'll just do a voice vote for the mining issue, the bond things, and all those kinds of things. We'll still do a roll call vote. That being said, we'll move forward with the approval of minutes from the October 24th meeting. Is there any corrections or additions?
Carpin moves to approve the minutes as presented.
Carpin moves.
Greenfield seconds.
And Greenfield seconds. Additional comments? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carried. We'll move on to the...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Morris.
You have to provide an opportunity for nays, because if there's a nay, then you have to do the roll call vote.
Yeah. That's why I waited a little bit. I didn't hear a nay, but okay. And I didn't. I guess I just figured if somebody had a nay, they'd say a nay, but we will ask for it going forward. This is new, doing this that way on the phone. So, all right. Thank you, Mr. Morris. Mining issues. Mr. Klein, are you there?
This is Brett Graves. Tom Klein is absent this morning, so I will field any questions the board may have.
Okay. Does anyone on the board have any questions on the mining calendar?
Morris moves to approve.
Morris moves to approve.
Carpin seconds.
Carpin seconds. Okay. Further discussion. Hearing none, Brenda, would you please call the roll?
Ewing.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Gary Hegg.
Aye.
Carpin.
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Schultz?
Aye.
And Blumhardt?
Aye. Motion carried. Mr. Holm, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Just one thing before you start, Mr. Holm. In doing my research on the new bonding company that we're looking at, I see that from what I could read, they just were moved from AM Best just moved them from an A minus to an A on their rating. So, but go forward, Mr. Holm.
Okay. Before I get started, there's a number of people on the phone that are representing WARF. If you could identify yourselves before I start.
Good morning. My name is Jasmine McCauley. I'm the WARF Environmental Manager.
Good morning. This is Jay Gere with Core Mining, VP Environment and Permitting.
Hello, this is Tom Elkins. I'm the president of Indemnity National Insurance Company, the surety company that has proposed the bond.
Hello. I work at Marsh. We are the broker that placed the bond and negotiated with Indemnity National Insurance Company.
Yeah, I guess that's it. So I'll get started. If you want to go to slide 2 in the board handout, and then I'll send in the board package. For the reclamation surety, we recalculated the surety in amount of $73,922,800. The current surety is $72,152,900, in which we need additional reclamation surety of $1,769,900. If you want to move to slide 3. We're also updating the postal insurance. The updated amount is $65,101,800. The current financial insurance is $52,689,000, which we need an additional post-closure financial assurance of $12,412,800. I'm going to move to slide 4. The reasons for the increases in these bonds is primarily it's a false bottom selenium treatment plant. During the hearing on the Boston Expansion Mine Permit application, which is now Mine Permit 490, DANR told the board that WARF was in violation of state surface water selenium standards in the East Branch of False Bottom Creek. Under water quality condition number 10 of the approved 9 permit 490 conditions, WARF was required to follow a compliance schedule to construct the treatment plant and begin water treatment. The bond increases cover water treatment costs and final reclamation costs for the treatment facilities. The increase also covers 2 small facility additions approved under technical revisions. I also worked in some inflation costs for seeding, heavy equipment, labor, and building demolition, and there were the associated increases in the direct costs. If you move to slide 5, this map shows what was being covered under the reclamation bond calculation in the false bottom treatment area. The green hash area was the location where they were going to put the holding pond for the treatment plant. However, they dug some test pits, and the construction of the pond in that area was determined not to be feasible. So that area, they closed all the test pits and reclaimed it. The laydown area outlined in purple, that's to support the construction of the treatment plant building and other facilities. And then there's a couple of small access roads and power and water line corridor, reclaiming the disturbance, surface disturbance to install facilities. And then also associated disturbance, so were areas that could be disturbed during construction. And this area is just to the north of the Trojan Waste Rock facility, which you can see in the photo. The reclamation surety, we calculated for the treatment plant construction disturbance, a total of $81,881. This involves ripping and regrading flat areas, top placement, topsoil placement, seeding, and then reseeding costs in case it's needed for the old pond area that was reclaimed. And then if you move on to slide 7, we also added in water treatment costs for the first 5 years of reclamation. You can see those costs here, the total in the amount of $145,320. This covers water treatment during the 5-year reclamation period, and it's based on a 56 gallon per minute treatment rate, so estimated from Wharf's consultant, BQE Water. Annual treatment costs, important to know that these treatment costs could change after the plant begins treating water and actual costs are obtained. And also, there's a one time consultant labor cost in year one of $6,600. To move to slide 8, this is the areas that were covered in the post closure financial insurance. In the light blue is the location of the selenium treatment plant building. That involves the building and the associated parking area and loading areas for reagents. And the dark blue to the south of that is the new holding pond. That was where they said put the location after the other one was not feasible. We also have a catchment sump in yellow and the pump house in orange. And then a topsoil stockpile in tan and then access roads in dark brown there. If you turn to slide 9, the post-closure financial assurance. Again, the same treatment costs, except we're estimated to require a 50-year treatment period. Again, the total costs, annual cost, $145,320. The next item, we also accounted for long-term, and that should be liner replacement in year 25 of $111,200. And also plant overhaul in year 25 of $1.3 million. And then if you move to slide 10, we can move to year 50 when we anticipate water treatment will be completed. Cost for reclaiming the selenium treatment complex, including the building, removing the holding pond and liner, reapplying topsoil, and then reclaiming the access road down the plant and then demolishing the plant building. Those total base costs are come to $343,421. And all these costs that I just went through, this does not include the indirect costs, which for this particular, the reclamation costs would amount to 47%. If you move to slide 11, these are listing of just current surety bonds we're holding. Again, totals to $72.1 million. And I did checked all these companies before the meeting, and I previously did that also in January when we did the annual reports, and all these companies have strong to excellent stable ratings. If you move to slide 12, we add on the for the reclamation bond. The new surety for indemnity national insurance covers that increase of $1,769,900, which brings a new reclamation bond total of $73,922,800. Slide 13, these again are the current post-closure surety bonds that we're holding. Again, I reviewed the companies. They all have strong debts and stable ratings, and no change from my review in January. And slide 14, Indemnity National, we had that $12,412,800 increase, which brings total post-closure bond to $65,101,800. Last slide, Glenn, Chairman Mark mentioned earlier, there is an upgrade from AM Best to that on November 19th, 2024. AM Best upgraded its rating from Indemnity National Insurance from A- to A for financial strength and A- to A for long-term credit. And the outlook has been changed from positive to stable. Moving to the matrix sheet, I will start with the reclamation bond. Our recommendation is to accept bond number N-G-00012, Indemnity National Insurance Company, in the amount of $1,769,900. The acceptance of this bond will increase Wharf's reclamation bond to $73,922,800. Do you want me to also proceed with the recommendation on post-closure financial assurance?
Yeah, do them both, but we will split them up when we look at voting, Eric.
Okay, for the post-closure financial assurance, our recommendation is set bond number N-G-000013, Indemnity National Insurance Company, in the amount of $12,412,800. The acceptance of this bond will increase Wharf's post-closure financial assurance to $65,101,800.
Thank you, Eric. Board members, do any of you have questions for Eric or the bonding company or any of the people online? Well, hearing none, I would take a motion then to accept bond number N-G-000012 from Indemnity National Insurance Company for the amount of $1,769,900 to increase our surety bond on permits 356, 434, 435, 464, 476, and 490. Could I have a motion to accept that?
Yielding motion to accept.
Accept motion by Ewing. Is there a second?
Garfin seconds.
All right. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Hearing none. Brenda, would you please call the roll?
Ewing?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hag?
Aye.
Carpin?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Schultz?
Aye.
And Blumhart?
Aye. Motion carried. We will proceed now to the acceptance of the post-closure financial assurance increase. This would be to accept bond number N-G-000013, Indemnity National Insurance Company, in the amount of $12,412,800. This would for bits number 356, 434, 435, 464, 476, and 490. Could I have a motion to approve this, please?
Morris moves.
Carpenter moves to approve.
I got Morris. I didn't catch who was second there.
Carpin second.
Carpin? All right. Carpin second. We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Hearing none, Brenda, would you please call the roll?
Ewing?
Aye.
Greenfield?
Aye.
Gary Hag?
Aye.
Carpin?
Aye.
Morris?
Aye.
Schultz?
Aye.
And Blumhardt.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you to Wharf and for the companies and Eric for giving us the information. We'll now move forward to our next part on the agenda, which is discussion on conversion of limestone mine permits to mine licenses. That basically is a carryover from last month when we were having these discussions. First, I would say that some ways I almost wish I wouldn't see this, because I did not have a true grasp of how underbonded we are. And with that, I'll open the floor to anyone who has comments or questions of the staff.
Chairman Glenn,
yes.
This is Bob Morris. We
yes,
have a
sir.
Handout that consists of four pages. Is there someone from Danner that can kind of take us through this and explain what it's intended to communicate?
Chairman Blumhardt, this is Mike Lees, Administrator of DANR, the Minerals Mining and Superfund Program.
Yes, Mike.
I'd be happy to walk the board through that four-page packet right towards the end of the board packet, 6 pages from the end, where it starts information on conversion of limestone mine permits to mine licenses.
Yeah, we'd appreciate that.
Okay. I've got quite a bit to communicate here, so hopefully it'll clear some of this up and give the board a little more comfort in regard to the overall picture of what's happened here this year. So back in January, the department helped bring Senate Bill 111 before the South Dakota legislature. The bill had two main parts. One part brought comprehensive increase to surety requirements for construction aggregate mining, small-scale permitted mining, and mineral exploration. The second important part of the bill was designed to create a level playing field for limestone mining operators who sold their product for agricultural purposes, such as for use in soil amendment or in cattle feed. So prior to enactment of Senate Bill 111, operators could mine the same material from the same pit with the same relatively low potential for environmental impact, but they would be subject to vastly different surety requirements depending on whether the material was used for agricultural purposes or construction purposes. This inconsistent bonding requirement was unfair to the handful of operators who chose to sell their limestone as an agricultural product. So I kind of gave an overview of Senate Bill 111 after it was approved at a board meeting earlier this year. The bill was a major win for the board, the department, and all of South Dakota, because it brought our mining surety requirements up to date after more than 40 years of no changes. The surety changes under SDCL 45-6, that's our sand and gravel construction aggregate statutes. So those were particularly significant, raising the surety requirement from $500 an acre to $3,850 per acre, and raising the statewide blanket surety requirement from a paltry $20,000 to $300,000. So if you look at your page 2 of your handout, this is kind of what I'm referring to in the next paragraph here. Prior to Senate Bill 111, only 8.4% of the $44 million in reclamation liability associated with our sand and gravel mines was covered by surety. So that's our estimate. We estimate there's about $44 million in unreclaimed acres out there. That's reclamation liability that the operators hold. So with the previous bonding scheme, only 8.4% of that was actually covered by surety. So our projected numbers in terms of when the full five-year incremental surety increases, when all those have occurred, we'll be up to over 50% of reclamation liability covered for all of those sand and gravel acres across the state. So that's a vast improvement. It was much needed. That's something the board has encouraged us to pursue for a long time, and it finally came together, and we're very pleased that, that the legislature approved that. So there's a couple, you know, at the last month's meeting, the board expressed concern about five limestone mine sites where the surety requirement actually went down due to enactment of Senate Bill 111. So overall, you know, 1,000 mine sites, the surety went up. For these handful, the surety actually went down. And the decrease in surety for these five mine sites was fairly dramatic. However, the net impact of Senate Bill 111 will be to significantly increase the surety requirements for roughly 1,000 other mine sites, thereby greatly increasing overall mining surety statewide. So the small step backwards on the five sites was a reasonable compromise and was necessary to make things fair for agricultural limestone producers, such as Pete Lee and Sons and Simon Contractors. So on that page two of the four-page handout, so you got two pages of tables and then two maps. So on page two, I'd like to point out one additional piece of information that's kind of buried in that page. Statewide, there are only six of these special ag lime sites. So there's only six being converted from permit to license, including the five that you approved the surety release on last month. The one remaining conversion is a small-scale mine permit. So the other five that you did were large-scale permits. The last one is a small-scale permit. It's less than 10 acres. So on that one, actually, the surety associated with conversion, the surety will actually go up for that site. So in terms of the page one, if you want to refer to that in the handout, after the October meeting, the board requested specific information regarding the recent conversion of Pete Lee and Sons and Simon Contractors limestone permits to mine licenses. So the information outlined on the tables on page one addresses those specific questions. I'll walk through the tables, but Brett Graves, Eric Holm, and I are also here. We can answer any questions that you have regarding information in the tables. So page one, the first table there shows Pete Lee and Sons permits, what they had prior to the conversion. So they had two permits where they were mining limestone for agricultural purposes, permit 58 and permit 216. You can see the acreage there. So under permit 58, those acres were bonded under the permit, and they were also bonded under the license. They have, Pete Lee and Sons have a mine license. So they were mining out of that same pit. Some of it was used for agricultural purposes. Some of it was used for construction purposes. So we were double bonded there. You go down to the next table, Simon Contractors mine permits. They had three. And you can see the acres associated with those sites. And again, some of the sites were double bonded, license and mine, and the one was not. And you can see for both the first two tables there, you can see how much surety was held under those permits. The third and fourth tables show Pete Lee and Sons and Simon Contractors mine license details. So you can see what license they had in place. You can see how many acres were under that license, and then how many acres were added to the license by the ag lime permit to license conversion. And then as you look down the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh columns in those tables, you can see the amount of surety required now. And then you can see the tiered or incremental increases that were approved under Senate Bill 111. So on July 1st, 2026, surety goes up again on July 1st, 2027, and then July 1st, 2029, the final total amount approved under Senate Bill 111 will be in effect. Any questions on the tables? The tables really address the specific questions that were sent to the department right after the board meeting last month.
Chairman Glenn, Bob Morris.
Yes, Bob.
Say, Mike, if you go to page two, so we, according to this, we have mine operators as of November 2024, private 418, and total active licenses 976. Total unreclaimed acres is 11,437. Whether it be for Pete Lean or Simon or the other small operators, what's the department's process to check on these sites, and if a site is not being used, telling them to reclaim it? Or is the reclamation initiated by the operator themselves, or are they given any incentive or any any push by the Danner to kind of tell us how that? Because you got 11,000 acres, and first blush is, well, that means 11,000 acres is unreclaimed. That means it's being mined. I find that hard to believe. So tell us how you get these folks to reclaim, or what triggers reclamation.
Mr. Morris, this is Brett Graves. I can answer that question. The state law does not require an operator to reclaim by a certain date. That is left up between any contract between the landowner and the operator. The operator lets us know when they are planning to reclaim the site or it already is reclaimed, and we do an on-site inspection to make sure that site is reclaimed properly. As far as overseeing these 11,000 acres, each operator is required to submit an annual report once a year asking how many acres they mine, how many acres they reclaim, and how many tons they've taken out within the last year. And we also use aerial imagery to double-check those figures, as well as on-site inspections.
Mr. Chair, I add in a little bit too. This is Mike Lees. With the significant surety increase under Senate Bill 111, particularly for the sand and gravel operators, we anticipate that going from $500 an acre to $3,850 an acre is going to stimulate a lot of the smaller operators, especially, to go in and reclaim some of the open acres that they may have been on the fence about whether they're going to mine it again in 5 years or reclaim it. We're thinking that a lot of the smaller operators will go in and clean up a lot of the unneeded open acres so that they won't have to pay that significant bond increase.
Thank you, staff. Any other board members got questions?
One more question, Chairman.
Yes, Glenn, Bob
Morris. Is there any internal policy of Danner that if they get these reports, and let's assume you were relying on the efficacy of the submitter, but the let's say a site hasn't been used for 10 years. There's been no production, no mining, but it hasn't been reclaimed. Does anything queue up, a letter from Danner, or is that is it permissible to have an unreclaimed property not be active for 10 years, as long as there's a surety?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike. Please, I can address Mr. Morris's question. No, the only thing that queues up a letter or initiates us directing the operator to reclaim the site is if they stop filing their annual report and stop paying their annual fee. So we have a lot of operators or a lot of licensees who have a site, and it, you know, it may be used on a road project, and then 8 years later, it's used on another road project, and then 8 years later, it's used on the same road project again. So it is often left open and unreclaimed for an extended period of time, just based on when it's needed. So, sometimes we do run into issues where, especially if there's a landowner or the lands change hands, where people want to have that reclaimed, but the operator still has the site open, still paying the fee, and still, in terms of what we consider, they're still actively mining it, even if they haven't touched that for 5 years.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if I may continue.
Yes, Mr. Marsh.
This is just a comment. It was after the last meeting when I got to looking myself at Senate Bill 111. During the meeting when we made the motion, I felt on one hand that the law changed, Simon Contracting and Pete Lean was just taking advantage of the law, and this may have been an unintended consequence. I was really had no heartburn approving that because of their financial stability and their longevity in the area. I still, even after getting this information, I still think this became potentially an unintended consequence of the Senate Bill 11. But when you look at it in context, once the July 2029 comes along, like Mr. Lee said, you know, there are probably going to be a number of operators that are going to say, hey, this thing hasn't been used for 6, 8, 10 years, let's reclaim it, so on and so forth. So, you know, at the end of the day, I guess I appreciate the fact that Mike and the department individuals who put this material together, they responded to our inquiry, and it was nice to see this information put in context. And what's interesting is one of the other perhaps unintended consequences is the number of active license sites will go down, and people will get their areas reclaimed that haven't been used for 5, 6, 8, 10 years. So thank you, Mike, and thank you for your team who put all this together.
Mr. Chairman, Doyle Carpen.
Yes, Doyle.
Yes, I have a couple questions here. I heard the word annual fee out there. What is the annual cost for people to re-up or renew their permit every year?
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lees. So there are 418 private licensed operators. So each of those has a license, and then under each license, there's one or more sites. So an operator may have one site, they may have 10 sites. Each site, each active mine site, is a $100 annual fee.
Okay, thank you. I guess I'm seeing, yes, we're looking at the five-year plan, however we want to describe this bill. I guess my concerns are 976, less than 1,000, thank goodness, but sites that were not, I guess, environmentally, I guess that's part the title in our board name, that I have concerns with, that anything could, I mean, if they're not used, if they're, the wood should, they're idle, that anyone could come in there and, I mean, all of a sudden becomes a temporary garbage dump. I guess I, unless we inspect them at least annually, every single site, I have concerns. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, this is Mike Lees again.
Yes, Mike.
Yeah, with 1,500 sites, you know, we have not only 1,000 private sites, we also have public sites, counties, townships, municipalities. There's no way that there are three sand and gravel inspectors are able to get out to all sites every year. The team has a list of priority sites, particularly sites that are reclaimed and they want their surety released. But then also any type of complaint or problem that comes to our attention, we'll put that on the list as a priority inspection. There are obviously waste management requirements that you can't just go out and dump old tires or garbage in a gravel pit. Not to say people don't do that, but if something like that comes to our attention, we definitely go out and look at that mine site.
Further questions from the board for Mr. Lees or the department? I would also like to agree with Mr. Morris. Appreciate you guys taking time to put all this information together. It helped give us some clarification and some basic knowledge of what's out there for permits, the acres, the reclamation, and all that. Appreciate the time that the staff took to put this together.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Morris, you're quite welcome, and I apologize. When we brought those changes to you last month, this context would have been a great way to present that. Overall, Senate Bill 111 was just such a big win for us, but the little minor unintended consequences were not a big deal in our mind. And yeah, I can see with the sticker shock of going from $1 million down to $20,000 for the one that, this context would have been very helpful and probably would have alleviated us all having to do this the next month. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, like I said, we appreciate speaking for myself for sure. I do appreciate all the work and giving me some perspective into all the numbers that are actually out there. So are there any other questions for Mr. Lees or the department? Hearing none, we'll go on to we'll now enter the public comment period. In accordance with South Dakota Codified Law 125-1, this is time for anyone who has anything that they want to bring to the board or say to the board. Is there anyone online or anyone in peer that wishes to comment? All right. Then we will close the public comment period for this meeting. As of right now, the next meeting is projected to be January 16th, 2025. As it looks now, Brenda, does it look like it'll probably be via the phone?
Apparently so, yeah. I haven't heard of anything for the agenda yet.
So there may be a mine permit transfer written by them. So.
Okay. But nothing that's going to require us to meet in person?
No, not that I know of.
Right. Okay. All right. Anybody from the board have anything else they want to bring up? If not, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Chairman Glenn, Bob Morris.
Yes, Bob.
Maybe we can talk off the record on this, but I thought you were going to throw a Christmas party for everybody.
Okay. Yeah, all right. And where would I do that, Bob? In Bowdle and make you all drive to Bowdle?
I guess we can talk about that off the record.
Yeah. Knowing you, you probably wanted a Jake's in Deadwood, so. All right, so. Hearing nothing else.
Morris moves to adjourn.
Morris moves to adjourn. Is there a second?
Carpin seconds.
Carpin second. Further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion carried. Thank you all.